Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Sahil Mehta. Sahil helps high-performing entrepreneurs, founders, chief executive officers, C-suite executives, and next-generation leaders build success without regret. As a success coach, author, Entrepreneur Magazine contributor, and member of Dr. Marshall Goldsmith's 100 Coaches, Sahil works with leaders who have already achieved but now want more clarity, energy, presence, and alignment. He has coached and spoken at or for organizations including HP, Dell, Bank of America, Procter & Gamble, Tata Group, Entrepreneur Organization, and YPO. A serial entrepreneur and mountaineer, Sahil brings hard-won lessons from business and the world's toughest peaks to help leaders declutter, decide better, perform sustainably, and live fully. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and insights on how we can improve our focus, decisions, and lives while winning in business. So Sahil, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. It's such a pleasure to be here, Daryl.
Yeah, well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you here. And I, you know, when we had our pre-call, I even got off. I was like, I just enjoyed that conversation. I'm looking forward to this call. But how did you even get into the world of business? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Were your parents entrepreneurs and you've been like a little entrepreneur your whole life? Or how did you even get into business?
Well, funnily enough, my father was actually an employee. But I never knew that because the way he worked in the company and bringing clients home, the environment that was created around me felt very entrepreneurial. And he would always be inviting me to the office on whenever I had some free time. So even though he was an employee, in my mind, I thought he was one of the partners in the office. And it was only in my 20s or in my late teens, I realized, oh, actually, he doesn't own part of this business. He's working there.
Got it. Okay. So that was the environment you grew up in. How about yourself? What was your first taste of entrepreneurship?
Ooh, I believe it was in a British school, we call it a tuck shop, right? It's like the candy stores or a shop in school. And I was working there for one week, I think it was, or one weekend. I can't remember the details. I was quite young. And it was not just about people coming and saying, hey, I'd like to buy this bar of Snickers or Mars bar, whatever it was, or these packet of chips. It was, how can you generate more revenue by highlighting some other things? Maybe you had some offers going on. How do you communicate with these people so that they are bought in and they go, ooh, you know, I can actually get more bang for my buck. Maybe something's expiring and you want to highlight that because you're selling at a discount. But it just showed me how you can interact with people and how you can win them over or make big blunders and learn from them for the, you know, when the next customer comes along. It also allowed me to handle money. So you get good at kind of counting and understanding that there's a cost to this. This is how much you sell it for. This is the profit you're making. So it sounds pretty small, but as you get used to it, it almost becomes second nature. You know, that's how you start thinking moving forward.
So this was your own tuck shop you're running, or you were working at someone else's and they were coaching you?
No, I was working, and I don't even know who the owner was, to be honest. It was so long ago, but I was working there. And then I remember I received, which I think is the equivalent of about $4 or $5, right? And that was huge for me as a young teenager. I didn't even spend that money. I kept that envelope. I saved it thinking this is the first income I've ever made. I want to treasure this for as long as I can.
I love that. I love that. Well, because a lot of people, they'll get a job, but they'll just kind of clock in, clock out. It sounds like you really took initiative. I mean, that's what jumped out to me right away. So I think that's a powerful lesson. So then what was...
Well, Daryl, if I may interrupt there, it comes from a place of curiosity. It's not just let me be transactional or give what is required. Let me see what works. Let me see what doesn't work. Let me see if something ticks someone off or makes them happy, or and does that change how they purchase things? And so it's all about just understanding people by being curious. And I think that's kind of stayed with me because I'm always wondering why people do the things that they do.
So, okay. So that was your first taste. And then let's walk through your career from there. So were you ever a partner in someone's business? What was like the first business that you got into?
Yeah. So for the first 4.5 years, I was actually working for someone else. It wasn't an entrepreneurial journey, but I realized that, and this was based on a friendship that I had, I was working eventually for a friend of mine. And working for a friend where the expectations aren't necessarily aligned can cause disastrous consequences. And in our case, our friendship almost completely fell apart. And when I say fell apart, I mean, this was very painful for me because we spent 3 years living together in university and we were friends before that. So we were very close. But again, and this is not just in the workspace, but just not having aligned expectations because of assumptions, perhaps, or, well, mainly assumptions. But if you're not aligned, if you're not very clear that this is what we're communicating, and I believe that's the cause of so many challenges that the world faces today, things can go horribly wrong. So I then decided to leave because I said the friendship is more important than the work that was offered to me. I was still very young. I had faith in myself that I could make it. It didn't matter. And so I wrote this long letter and I quit to save the friendship. And just for the listeners to know, today we're amazing friends. So it worked. Now, when I had nothing to do, I was just hanging around. I was in New York at the time. And a friend calls me up and says, hey, you did engineering in university. You're very good at modeling. You worked at an investment bank. Can you help me develop financial models to assess these real estate transactions that I'm doing? And these are pretty substantial in the, you know, eight-figure transactions. So I said, sure. And as I started helping him, I go, ooh, this is actually quite interesting. And then I said, why don't you and I partner up together? I can bring in some capital from high net worth individuals and we can kind of participate in these deals together. So that was my first foray into really having a partnership with someone. However, 2008 came about 2 years after we began. And we all know what happened during that time, especially in real estate, as well as all other financial instruments that people had invested in. So I almost lost everything that I made. Because I didn't think that it would be such a bad collapse.
Right.
Anyhow, fast forward a little bit, and this is where, again, communication starts to go wrong. Someone comes up with a great idea. I say, yes, let's partner together. He was the majority shareholder because he put in more money. I was the minority shareholder. What I was expecting and what he was expecting, again, was not aligned. And it's a shame because we were selling a product in the Middle East that would improve the efficiency of air conditioning systems, hence saving power. Now, for any of you that know, the Middle East is a warmer part of the world. So this is almost like a no-brainer. You think this is definitely going to succeed. And it had all the right elements to succeed, but the two of us were not aligned. What my expectations were and his were different. And that ultimately caused me to leave because I said, I mean, I was the minority. I took a hit and I said, I just can't work with this man anymore. I'm not saying he's good or he's a bad person. It's just that our core values weren't aligned. And when I realized this, you know, after having this experience a number of times, I said, one, communication is key up front in any relationship, because if it's not discussed and if the what ifs are not discussed, when things happen, it can cause a rift.
Yep.
And it kind of reminds me of even when I climb the mountains. Before we climb the mountains, we always have a discussion on the what ifs, because if they happen at 5,000 meters or, you know, close to 20,000 feet above sea level, you're not in the right mind space to make important decisions. But if you've had those conversations and pre-made those decisions, when they actually happen, you know what to do next.
That's incredibly powerful for people to walk through, because it cuts down on hesitation. It improves decision-making process, because when you're in an unemotional state, you're objective, you analyze your resources, you have everyone there, you brief together. If this, then that. You know, people ask, because my wife and I have been together, this is our 10-year anniversary later this year in September. And we probably had less than 10 big blowups, like between us. And it, fighting and arguing, like we bicker from time to time, sure. But we're so in sync. And part of it is because we've got a 3-year kind of agreement. Like, what do you want for your life in 3 to 5 years? What do I want for mine? We actually have a weekly meeting that we sit down. We go for breakfast once a week. And we started including our eldest daughter in it as well. And I've got, like, we just have a Google Sheet, but it's like a co-journaling. It doesn't have to be so serious. And it talks about like career and health and finances and problems and to quit doing. So all those little pet peeve things, like I hate it when you squeeze the toothpaste at the top. Like there's a forum where we're just talking and we're eating breakfast, like, oh, to quit doing. Is there anything you or I need to quit doing this week? You know, or next week, you know what? I've been trying to get to bed because I got to get up early and it's been tough because, oh, okay, cool. There's no reason to blow up because there's a place for that. And then we do exactly what you talked about. The what if this, then that. How do we, and it's so powerful to be proactive on that. I think that's such a major takeaway for people right here. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you talked about that as well. Like that's the communication and the what ifs. Everybody, you know, hopes for sunshine and rainbows, but you know, what's the saying? Hope for the best, but plan for the worst, right?
Absolutely. And I love what you said, because it applies in all relationships. It could be your business relationships, your personal relationships. And when you're having those discussions, you're not assuming. You're not having expectations that are unreasonable. It might make sense in your head, but ultimately we all see the world differently through our own set of lenses. And the other person may see it completely differently. So by having those discussions on a weekly basis, like you are, or whatever the frequency is, it just allows for alignment to happen. And when there's alignment, there's a better level of understanding. But more importantly, there's a higher level of trust between each other. And when there's a higher level of trust, things just work so much faster and smoother.
Yep. Yep.
So again, whether it's in the office or in the house.
And when something happens, there's no energy lost in hesitation or consideration or nothing. Because if this, then that. We talked about what if this, everybody knows the plan. And there's no need to like coordinate in the moment, right? That happens sometimes like when you're driving. You're driving and your partner is giving you directions. Oh, left there. But you get this tense moment because the window of decision-making is closing and that is gone when you do that in advance. If this, then that. I love that. That is such a powerful, it's simple. Why? Sahil, this is too simple. It's too easy.
The best kept secrets usually are, Daryl. And that's the thing, you know, I kept thinking to myself previously, oh my goodness, to shift and to modify and to become a better version of myself and improve as a leader, as a husband, as a son, as a father, it's going to require a lot of effort. And yes, it is work, but it's like my mentor, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, always says. He says, Sahil, everything I'm about to tell you is easy to understand, but it's not so easy to implement because it requires courage, it requires discipline, and it requires humility.
Those are powerful. I love that. The fundamentals are fundamental. I love that so much. And that's I think in gymnastics, the definition of virtue is doing the common uncommonly well. And I think it's almost what you're speaking about here. Like it's simple stuff, but you have to be able to do it uncommonly well. There, if to draw a parallel, and I did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for 6-7 years. And one of the most successful competitors was Hodger Gracie. And I have a lot of respect for him. He's not one of my superheroes, but I have a lot of respect for him. But everybody knows what's going to happen. He's like going to judo throw you. He's going to take top mount and he's going to do a gi choke. And this is the guy, like he's against world competitors. These are things you learn in your first 6 months when you're training. How to like flip somebody, what mount is, how to control a mount, how to do a gi choke from there. But he's doing it to the best in the world and they all know what's coming. Like that's the thing. Like they all know what's coming and he still does it. And that's like doing the common uncommonly well. There's real virtue in that. I love that. Anyways, okay, sorry. I'm like drifting off here, but that's really powerful. So, okay. So when did you get into mountaineering? How did you get into mountaineering?
Well, it's one of those bucket list things. I had a friend, you know, a friend of mine came to me, actually it was a friend's older brother, and he said, Sahil, let's climb Mount Everest. And I said, buddy, we've never even stayed in a tent. What do you mean, let's climb Mount Everest? I said, how about we start at the base of Everest, right? Which is still a big ordeal. It's 5,500 meters. So that's about 18,500 feet, if I'm not mistaken, above sea level. And the funny thing is we plan the entire journey and then I go with my wife and one of my dear friends and he doesn't come.
Yeah.
And even though he's the one who planted the mountaineering seed in me, I did Everest Base Camp in 2010. Now it's 2026. I've done many mountains since. He still hasn't done one.
I had a friend who suggested that about biking or, hey, Daryl, let's cycle across Canada. And I said, why don't we just do like Ontario first? And I did. I biked to my grandma's 750 kilometers, but same thing. It was his idea and I did it. But
I do want to share one thing from this story because once we climb, I got bit by the mountain bug. And for all those who don't know what that is, it's you get this illness where you just want to keep going back because you loved it so much. So like many things I've done in my life, I said, wow, that was amazing. I need to do it again. 2010, right? December 2010. Then we decided to start a family. We had our first child. We said we don't really want to leave the kids because these journeys are usually anywhere from 1 week to 10 days, possibly longer. And to leave a young child, not so comfortable for us. So we said, okay, well, but then we decided to have the second child. Another few years go by. And then and now it's 2016, right? And I said to myself, Sahil, you keep saying you're going to do this and you're never doing anything. And 2016 was one of those years where I had this, I was feeling low. I was 36 years old. I checked all the boxes of success. you know, in my 20s, I said if I had fame and fortune, and by fame, I don't need to be a famous actor or a TV star. It just means that my company is well known in the industry. So I had that. I was living in a 6-bedroom villa, driving a Porsche, you know, had the family, the lifestyle, everything. And yet I said, why am I feeling this emptiness inside? And I realized that I asked myself, am I being ungrateful because I have all these things? And are these like first world problems? But what, you know, as I started to dig deeper, I realized that I was not living my definition of success. I was living a definition of success that was inherited. It was one that came from society, from family, from community, from media, social media, etc. And the thing was, it really confused me because I was following the system to the T. However, it wasn't my system. And so when I realized this, I said to myself, and I went on this retreat with some fellow entrepreneurs, and we all agreed to two words. We agreed to no judgment. And that's when I felt this huge weight lifted off my shoulders. I didn't have to pretend to be someone I'm not. I didn't have to impress anyone. I could just be me. And the only way I can describe the 4 days of this retreat is euphoria. And as I came back, I said to myself, Sahil, something needs to change, because if this is who you are,
yeah,
this fearless individual, not fearing judgment and just doing what you feel is right, and you feel this way, then who the hell are you going back to? Because that's not you. And I realized, even though we live in a world of judgment, even if I could be half the man that I was on that retreat, I'm still way better off than where I am to, you know, where I was at that time. So I made one commitment to myself, and I said, Sahil, and this is very difficult for me, by the way, as a people pleaser. I said to myself, you're going to make yourself the number one priority, not from a selfish perspective, but from the perspective that when you become a better version of yourself and you're happier, you have more joy in your life, you're a better husband, a better father, a better son, a better friend, a better boss, a better co-founder, and all the other labels that I have. Mm-hmm. And so that's when, bringing back to the mountain, that's when I said, Sahil, you keep talking about the mountain and you keep saying, I'll do it next year. You're the first priority. Sign up now. Some friends had just climbed Kilimanjaro, the tallest mountain in Africa. So I called them up, got the name of the company that helped them and found out, you know, all the details. And I paid the money because I said, once I pay the money, that's locked in. I'm committed. And then the rest is history for mountaineering. You know, after that, I've almost climbed a mountain every year. Some years I climb more than one mountain. I just look for any reason to go to the mountain. If I'm not climbing a mountain, I'm skiing on a mountain. So I just love the mountains.
Yeah, that's powerful. And you hit on a really important note that you have to live your life for yourself. It's like no one can do your push-ups for you. And at the same time, when you die, whatever happens, if you believe in some sort of judgment or reckoning, you have to answer for yourself. And so you are a link in a chain, whether you're married or single, or you just live in a community or a company. And so the better you are, the stronger your link is in that chain. And so if you are constantly self-sacrificing and you think you're being altruistic, but you're diminishing your light and you're weakening yourself, you're actually doing everybody a disservice. And that's sometimes,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's an important point to bring up.
Absolutely. And I would add to that, that during that time, I still remember some of the feelings I had. I was asking myself questions like, is this how the next 20 years of my life are going to look like? You know, I thought entrepreneurship and having my own business meant that I would have freedom, but I feel that I'm shackled to my company, that I can't leave, that everything is dependent on me. And then I was also struggling with some health because I was always telling myself, oh, I'll get to it later. Yeah. I see it now. I didn't notice it so clearly then. There were some relationships in my life that weren't working out so well, which were very key, which included my spouse and my father. But here's the thing. When I came to this realization, I said, I can change this. This doesn't have to continue. If this is not how life should be, then let me start living the life the way it should be. And in order to do that, it's all started by defining what success meant to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really powerful. I saw this movie. It made a big impact on me when I was a kid, called Groundhog Day. And in it, you know, spoiler alert, but it, you know, the movie, if you haven't seen it, this guy is kind of a snarky character. And, you know, people kind of tolerate him. And he doesn't really realize how abrasive he is being around other people. And he's very narcissistic, self-centered. And he goes to this town for Groundhog Day, and he goes to bed and he wakes up and he's reliving the day he just had. And he's stuck in this sort of time loop where he just keeps waking up and he kills himself. He just does everything he can to escape this and just can't get out. He just always wakes up. It's always the same morning every time he goes to sleep. And so at some point he just sort of surrenders. It's like, okay, if I'm going to be here for eternity, I'm going to make it the best I can. And all of a sudden he really commits to being a better person and a better member of the community. And he invests in himself. You know, he learns to play piano, all this stuff. And he just all of a sudden is this bright joy to be around and this bright light. And then, you know, one day he wakes up and it's the next day. And I think it's very instructive in terms of made me think of, if I had to live the same day every day in my life, what would that day look like where I love who I've become? Like I achieve my goals and I love who I've become when I'm 80 or 90. And, you know, you bring up another point, like Puff Daddy, to bring up someone who's been in the news. He made the money. He had hundreds of millions of dollars. Last I checked, I think he's close to a billion in net worth. But like what did he spend? He spent it getting intoxicated and fornicating. That's accessible to all of us. I don't need to be in a Lamborghini to get intoxicated and fornicate and enjoy myself. And yet now he's in jail. And is it really worthwhile to do it in a Lamborghini versus whatever? Like, it's just not much of a difference. It speaks to what you said. Like, you marked all the check boxes of success, right? But there was like an emptiness to that. There wasn't the fulfillment and purpose and meaning. And I think if you get there and you step on so many other people, I mean, when we admire people when they're selfish for themselves, we go, hey, I can't, they got to do what's best for them. Like, hey, you know, you almost have a respect for that. But when it becomes to the detriment of the people in their vicinity, that's now toxic and evil to a certain extent. So you need to take care of yourself and bring yourself up, but you have to do it while taking care of other people. Otherwise, you get to the summit and you're alone and everything that was important you left behind on the trail. And then what? I think that's a really, that's what I got from part of what you were sharing. So
yeah, and I love what you said, because you also, part of what you were saying was it's also about protecting your own boundaries. And when you are comfortable, let me rephrase, when you're extremely comfortable in your own skin, not just comfortable, extremely comfortable in your own skin, you move away. It's about loving yourself. When I went on this journey and I started to stop pointing outwards, right? That's essentially what the journey I started. Because everything was someone else's fault. But then I said, you know what? No, look in the mirror, buddy. Because if you want to change, you got to change who you're looking at right now. Things around you are not going to change just because you want them to. You have to be the change. So I started to address the things that was clutter that I was carrying in my backpack. Because as we're all climbing our own metaphorical mountains, right? That is our definition of success. And as we're climbing these mountains, the backpack, we're carrying all this clutter inside. And we're even carrying stuff that is useful, but it's not good enough or doesn't give enough benefit to actually be in the backpack. So I started to identify this clutter that I'm carrying because it's weighing me down. It's slowing me down. And I said, buddy, you need to start focusing on it. And part of that was, I love my mornings. I really love my mornings. But if I to enjoy my morning, I can't have a silly night out where on a frequent basis, which could mean drinking a lot or going to bed really late, watching movies that stimulate my mind to the extent where it's harder to fall asleep. It just doesn't make sense. So there are certain people in the city where I live, which is in Dubai, who like to meet for dinner late. They meet at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Now that's getting close to my bedtime because I like to be asleep by 10 o'clock at the very late. Right? But that's my boundary. That's my boundary. And so I just tell them politely, like, look, if you really want to meet for dinner, can we meet at 6:30 or 7?
Yeah.
Or we meet for lunch on the weekend. Or if that doesn't work for you, I'm happy to come meet you after dinner. You can eat. I'll just sit with you and we can catch up. We don't have to eat together. But I'm protecting my boundary. And even when we do go out, unless if it's a special occasion of a dear friend or something, 9:30, I get up and I leave. Even if it's in the middle of something. And it's not because I don't respect anyone else. It's because I love me.
Respect yourself. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that allows me to have my early morning start, do my morning ritual, which fuels me for the rest of the day. Because when I spend those first 2-3 hours by myself, or a little bit with the wife and kids as well, because I sit with them while they're eating their breakfast and spend a little time before they go to school, I get energized. I'm focused. So when I enter the office, it's just, full steam ahead. And I'm actually, even though I'm entering the office much later, because I'm so much more focused, because I know what my definition of success is, I'm getting so much more done in the same amount of time. Because I'm focused and I've cut out all this fluff that I used to spend time on, which is now not in my life anymore. So a lot of people, when they look at me and they go, oh, you're working fewer hours, how's that affecting your work? I said, the work's never been better. We've had the best, last 4 years have been the best 4 years our company has ever had.
And it's because you're focused on the things that matter.
Matter for the company, matter for me, matter for the family. And if I may just, get into a little bit of how the success is defined, it's in the mountaineering world, we have something known as the seven summits. It's the seven tallest mountains, or the tallest mountain on each of the seven continents. And when you've conquered all seven summits, they say you've conquered the world. And that got me thinking, what if you conquered your inner world? And people say, well, why seven? Well, if I told you three, everyone would say health, wealth, relationships. It's too easy, right? But if it's seven, now you got to think. You have to think, what else is important for me in my life? So people define their seven summits. I then take them through a process of prioritizing them, understand which ones can they afford to drop and not drop. And then that gives them their definition, because success is never one thing. It's a combination. It's a culmination of things. And so you need to find out, what are the seven most important things in your life? And like I said, we prioritize them and understand what can be dropped and what not, because a lot of people tell me, well, I just need to sacrifice this now, just temporarily, which is fine, by the way. I've had to sacrifice things temporarily, but I've seen many people, they sacrifice it. And then when that, whatever it is they had to achieve, they've achieved it. Then the next thing comes along and again, something is sacrificed, and it's usually health or family. These are the two most common ones that I've seen with the highly successful business owners that I work with. And at some point I have to put up the mirror and say, hey, I keep hearing the sacrifice you're making, even though you've told me that your health is your number one priority and family is your number two priority, for example. Let's not kid ourselves. Those are not your highest priorities. Because if they were, you wouldn't be sacrificing them constantly. So it's important to know these things, because then you get a visual and you have an understanding that, am I making the steps that are in line with how I actually wish to live? Because here's the thing, Daryl. If you don't, fast forward till you're 90-something or 100-and-something. And I say that because I do believe all of us are going to live a lot longer than our predecessors. We're in our late 90s, perhaps in our hundreds. And this has been documented. There's a book on this, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. The number one regret is, I wish I had the courage to live
the life true to myself.
The life that I chose rather than the life that others expected of me. Something along those lines.
Yes.
Right? And when I think about that, because for me, death is always the biggest lesson. It's the one thing we know is going to happen. We just don't know when. But if I focus on that regret, which has been documented, and it's the number one regret of all the people that have been researched, I don't want to be in that bucket. So let me start living today.
Yeah.
This is the beauty. We have time. We have the choice. We have the tools. If not through the stuff that I've done and the research and the framework that I provide, there might be another framework that's better for you. But do something. Because it's like you said, if you're just repeating that Groundhog Day, if you're just on repeat, repeating that same day again and again, it will lead to regret. There's no doubt.
Yeah. I always like to say, not everything in the jungle kills you and eats you. Some things just attach themselves to you and feed on you for as long as they can. And that happens in our life. We talked about at the beginning of this call, like my phone doesn't vibrate. It doesn't ding. It doesn't beep. It doesn't anything, because it's my tool to reach out, interact with the world. It's not a portal so anybody, some telemarketer, anyone can interrupt my deep work, my time with my kids, my phone. Like, I live by my calendar. And if it's not on my calendar, then it's not. And if it's an emergency, you know, I'll get to it when I get to it. Like, it's never that important. It's never that important. You find out soon enough. And especially, anyway, so I think that that's a really important lesson for people. And like you, I love how you said that we're going to die anyways. I mean, not that I'm excited about dying, but you know, some people think we have an immortal soul. Some people believe in reincarnation. And some people think that through technology, we're going to achieve immortality in our generation, which is great. All three believe in an immortal existence. So in an immortal existence, what would be the trophies that you would put above your fireplace? What would be the things that you would cherish and prize and that you would consider awards? It wouldn't be the time that you went left, not right. It wouldn't be the time where you put yourself last. Those would not be the things that you would be most proud of. And that's how I think we're supposed to live. You know, we're not supposed to crush other people and seek revenge. Like, that's just so short-sighted. We're in this together. And I think we're in it to achieve what we want to do, but to make people, places, and things better than how we found them as best we can. You know, conflict is there. You need competition. But I don't know. I really love what we're talking about here, because I think it's some of the most important stuff that we can talk about, because Jim Rohn's got this great quote. If you have an idiot and you motivate him, now all you have is a motivated idiot. What he really needs is an education to point him in the right direction. And then at least they'll get there, no matter how long it takes. And that's this sort of stuff, especially with AI, artificial intelligence. You hear people talking about how execution is becoming less of a concern. It's more about, what do we execute on? And almost those deeper sort of purpose and meaning, like soul questions. Like, if I could snap my fingers and you could make any software tool in the world, well, what do you make? And why do you make it? And who's it for? And why would people buy it? These deeper, more significant questions. And that's like where we're moving as a species. So are there...
Daryl, I want to add something to what you said, because I love where this is going. A lot of the challenges that I face and I see my clients facing are not really external. These are challenges they put on themselves. And I always have to remind myself, because I own four businesses, and it can get overwhelming if I don't manage things well and make sure that I delegate properly, put systems and processes in place. And I'm going to use a mountain analogy again, because it's easy to understand. Every time I do a retreat and I take these amazing folks up a mountain, usually their first ever mountain, I always tell them, we have enough guides, we have enough people, don't worry, find your rhythm. But surely enough, on day one, because it's their first mountain, inexperienced, they're trying to keep up with other people because they feel they don't want to let them down. Maybe they don't want to feel like they're coming in second or last, whatever the thought is that's going through their head, but they're not going at their rhythm. And surely enough, at the first break, I see some of these folks and they're unhappy. And I asked them, I said, what's going on? You know, I'm not enjoying this. I thought it would be more fun. I feel I want to turn around and go back. Right. I said, look, let's try something. I see that you're trying to keep up with others. Forget anyone's here. Just go at the pace that you feel is right for you. An hour and a half later, the next break, big smile on the person's face. Oh my God, this is amazing. I heard the birds. I've been enjoying seeing the flowers. The air is so fresh. I'm loving this. I mean, I think this trip is too short now. I want to stay longer. And the difference was that they changed their pace. They went at a pace that was comfortable for them as opposed to someone else's pace. And I often find myself, Daryl, I'm not perfect. So many times I get into that, he's doing this, she's doing that, I need to speed up. Why am I not doing this? I should take that into consideration and add it onto my already busy schedule. And then I fall into that trap. And I have to remind myself, as a Sahil, whoa, 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 pause. Just put one foot in front of the other. And when you've done that, put the next foot in front of the other. Just keep doing that in the direction that is right for you. And rather than, and here's one tip that I can share with the audience, because I do this with myself all the time. Even when I have, when I'm not comparing and I have all these things on my plate, instead of trying to accomplish them in 6 months, I'll say, Sahil, let's accomplish this in 12 months. And I may still do it faster than 12 months, but I've given myself the space to operate at a rhythm that is fun as opposed to one that is stressful. Again, imagine you're on the treadmill. For some people, running at 6 miles an hour, they're feeling very comfortable. The moment I increase it to 6.5 miles an hour, they're hating it. So sometimes just a little bit of a slowdown can be the difference between I love it versus I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, my buddy and I, when we first got into business, we used to say roof and ramen. As long as I got a roof over my head and hot noodles, so I'm not starving, the rest is a game. And I think that's an important point. I mean, we talked again offline. Like my wife and I have moved full time to the farm because I feel the same way. I felt like in a lot of ways I was, you know, trying to keep up and rushing, and the cost of living is getting ahead. And oh my goodness, if I'm not doing millions of dollars every year, it's like, hold on a second. Let's just go to the farm, have the land paid off, set up some solar systems, get the well running, and get some chickens and plant some food. And then all of a sudden we can go back to whatever our pace is. And I think that that's something, you know, a lot of people might feel is out of reach, but some of these things are way more in reach than people think. And if you're feeling intense pressure, maybe you have to move in with a relative for a while. Maybe you got to move in and join. Maybe you got a downsize, whatever that is. But I think the lesson underneath is that you do better work when you're having fun and when you can be in the zone versus when you're freaking out. And that's the important place to be. People are energized and want to be around people that are enjoying their life and having fun. And you're most creative when you're in that space. So I love that rhythm idea. I love that you have to figure it out. And if you are being squeezed, you have to be willing to figure out, how do you restructure how do you design your life so you can have more comfort? Because we have turned sand into intelligence. People don't get this. We can do anything. Like a dog is only going to do the handful of things a dog can do, generally speaking. But humans, we can do anything. We took sand, made it into silicone chips, and then created intelligence. We turned sand into intelligence. Tell me that's not magic, right? Tell me that's
absolutely
not magic.
Absolutely.
And so absolutely, everyone listening to this is incredibly powerful, way more powerful than they could believe. And you can figure it out. The problem is, like you're saying, your self-imposed limits, negative self-dialogue, you're restricting your options because of these imposed shoulds. You should this, you should that. And the world is a lot bigger. The universe is a lot more accepting and flexible than people think it is. So I think...
Look, I always tell people there's really, based on the research that I've done, there are two ways that you can scale the mountains faster. One is by slowing down. And I know that sounds odd, but you're slowing down, but you're enjoying it. So even though it's a little bit slower, you know, you went from 6.5 miles to 6 miles an hour, it's not really that much of a slowdown, but at least you're enjoying the journey. Or you audit your backpack. What is in there? What are you carrying with you everywhere you go? Because if that weight is slowing you down, get rid of it. And I assure you, there's so many people that carry a lot of clutter or stuff that is useful, but not useful enough, and it's slowing them down. And here's a great tip to just kind of understand how you can identify the clutter in your life. I mean, there are many tools, but I'll share one, possibly two, with all of you right now. One is, at the end of each day, just get a pen and paper and ask yourself the following two questions. The first one is, what drained my energy levels today? And just write it down. Don't have to do anything with it. And the second question, because we don't want to end on a low, what raised my energy levels today? Again, just note it down. And as you note it down, and after a week, 2 weeks, you start to recognize patterns. You start to recognize there's things that happen frequently, which are either draining or elevating your energy levels. And the things that are draining your energy levels, well, that's clutter. It's something that needs to be addressed. And the things that are raising your energy levels, you might want to ask yourself, how can I do more of this in my life? So this is a very simple exercise that you can start now. Should I give one more?
Please. I'm a writer downer. I'm not paying attention. I'm taking notes.
The other one requires a lot more courage and it requires a lot more patience. So find, you know, speak to any stakeholder in your life and ask them the following question. How can I be a better, and then fill in the blanks? So if I were to ask my wife, for example, I would ask, how can I be a better husband? Because I don't see things that other people may see. But there's a rule that you have to follow. No matter what they say, when someone that they're offering you a gift. So when someone offers you a gift, you say thank you. Because if you react, if you react, they may not tell you the truth the next time. And that's not going to serve you. So you just say thank you. And then whatever, you know, from the list that you were provided, decide which ones you agree with and the things that you don't. The things you don't, just discard them. That's fine. And the things you agree with them, pick one or two and say, let me start applying that in my life right now.
Mm-hmm. That's really powerful.
Yeah, it's very simple. But here's another but. Apart from saying thank you, you don't have the expectation that they're going to ask you the same question back. It's not about them. This is about you. You ask them for yourself to grow. It's not to try to convince them to ask you the same question so you can give them a few tips on how they can be a better person.
That's right. That's a bad way to approach giving someone feedback on something. But I think that's really important because we all have blind spots. And business, I feel like, is very Shakespearean. Life is. And all Shakespeare's plays, the main characters fell victim to their greatest character flaw. And it was their inability to see it, get feedback, or listen to it that led to their demise. And I think that's really profound advice. Sahil, the stuff you've suggested today, none of this is rocket science in the sense of it. You don't need to know algebra and complex equations in order for it to make sense. But the impact it can have on your life is very significant. And some of this stuff is it's as simple as asking for forgiveness or just saying, I'm sorry. You could just say, I'm sorry to someone and all of a sudden put both your lives together on a whole new path. It's simple things like that that can have really you talked about your friend. You managed to salvage a relationship and you're still good friends to today. Simple actions, simple small hinges can swing big doors. How do you see things changing? Because right now there's a lot happening geopolitically, there's a lot happening economically, there's a lot happening technologically. What do you see on your horizon that you're paying attention to over sort of the next 3, 5, maybe even 10 years?
One thing that I'm actually seeing is a rise in consciousness. I find that when more and more challenges are happening and there's more polarity in the world, I'm also seeing the opposite of that happening. I'm seeing people coming together saying that this is enough. This is not how we wish to live. Whether you go to retreats, whether you go for adventure trips, fitness trips, spiritual trips. There's a lot more people coming today than ever before. And that's because there's a rise in consciousness. And my hope is that when people lead from the heart as well as the mind, the world will become a better place. But if we're operating from a place of fear, which I feel is a direct result of all the conflict that's going on with, unfortunately, the news that comes in on the news channels and the newspapers, it's pushing people towards fear. But love is strong and people's hearts are opening up and you're seeing that rise. And that's keeping me excited. Because when you operate from that place, rather than looking at the I, you're looking at the collective. You're looking at how can we rise together. And if that can be brought into your personal life, your work life, I mean, what you can achieve is just astronomical.
Yeah. I love what you said. There's a guy, I forget his name, but he did a study on like the frequencies of consciousness. And he had different hertz for like emotions correlating. I forget. It's on my computer, but I'm not going to search because we're recording this. But one of the things that stood out and someone's interpretation of it to me was the red is always associated with the devil because it's the lowest frequency vibration. And it's associated to animal, primal, instinctive urges. And if you think about our brains, like we got the lizard brain and then the mammalian brain and now our neocortex. And it's just like that evolution allows us to rise above our base, you know, like fears and concerns. We can rise above fear. We can plan in advance. If this, then that, what do? And we can collaborate, cooperate in a better way. And that's actually allowed us to create the society that we have. So I think that's a great message. And I'm certainly hopeful. I'm hopeful that we do come through all this as well. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to come together. Sahil, this has been a great interview. I've got a couple pages of notes here. If people want to engage, if they want to learn more, if they want to get involved, they want to learn about the seven summits, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch?
So, Daryl, I want to give everyone listening here something I normally reserve for my private coaching clients. And it's called the Zero Regret Success Kit. You've built the business, you've got the net worth, you've checked every box you were told to check, but there's this voice that's quietly saying something's missing, then this is for you. The first part is the success audit. It's what I use with my private clients on day one. And you complete it in about 10 minutes, if not less. And it's going to show you exactly where the gaps are across the seven dimensions of a fulfilling life, which areas you've been neglecting while building the business and which ones to focus on first. Most people tell me it gave them more clarity about their life than the last decade did. The second piece is the success redefinition session. This is the exact starting point I use before we go deeper into my $30,000 coaching engagement. It's a private 45-minute call where I personally walk through your audit results and map out the path from where you are to where you actually want to be. I cap this at 5 for your audience, not to be exclusive, but because I run every one of these calls myself, no team, no assistants, just me for 45 minutes each. And 5 is genuinely what I can do without sacrificing my time or my other businesses. So make sure you grab it before it's gone. And the link that I've created for your listeners is go to podcast.sahilmehta.com/Daryl. That's podcast.sahilmehta.com/Daryl.
Yeah, we better make sure we get that right.
Exclusively.
There's a lot of different ways
for your audience.
So podcast.sahil, S-A-H-I-L, Mehta, E-H-T-A. So it's podcast.sahilmehta.com/Daryl, D-A-R-I-L. That's one R, folks, just one R, okay? And with a Y. So go check that out. That is a great thing. I'm going to do it. I'm curious to know what the seven summits are. So like I said, this has been great. I feel like people may want to listen to this more than once just to make sure they got all the nuggets. You can sit there all night and not think of this stuff on your own. Even if you know it, sometimes you just need to be refreshed and reminded to reorient your life because things happen, new social media, something else popped in. So you may want to listen to this again. Sahil, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I think you've asked all the right questions, but if I may, I'd love to leave the audience with a story.
Yeah, please.
There's a sailor and he goes to the captain because it's payday. So he goes to the captain and says, Captain, can I please get my pay? To which the captain replies, come tomorrow. So the sailor goes to bed and is all excited the next morning, thinking about all the ways he's going to spend his money, goes to the captain and says, Captain, can I please get my pay? The captain looks at him and goes, hey, didn't I tell you come tomorrow? So folks, as Daryl mentioned, there are lots of nuggets you've picked up along the way. Pick one. Don't try to do everything. Pick one and start today.
It's powerful. That's right. One foot in front of the other, right? One day at a time, one step at a time. Sahil, this has been such a great call. I'm so glad I had you on the show. I'd love to have you back sometime in the future. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. Knowing you got your own family, your own community, your own direct reports, your own businesses. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I so we could all learn from you and do better.
Absolutely. And for all those listening, make sure you listen to Daryl's other podcasts. They're awesome. And make sure to leave a 5-star review.
Thank you, everybody.